Big show for you here today. It is another edition of Mock Draft Monday. We have EJ Snyder of the Bootleg Football Podcast with us to give us five player to team fits that he absolutely loves, plus the prospect that he is willing to stand on the table for. I promise you, you're going to learn some new names in this show, okay? You're going to hear some players that are not being talked about on every single other podcast. You're going to absolutely love it. Let's get into it. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. And joining me to do just that in Indianapolis, because we are pre-taping this show, all right? It is my good friend from the Bootleg Football Podcast. It is our guy, EJ Snyder. EJ, what's going on, buddy?
Matt, thanks for having me. This is the epicenter of the NFL universe for the next week. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't want to be anywhere else.
You're seeing a lot of people. You're talking to a lot of people. I saw you out last night.
That's correct.
You know, I said this to Matt Money Smith and Chris Harry over at the Chargers podcast. I was like, you know, so the first thing I did this morning was go on their show. I was like, they would ask me how late you were out last night. I was like, oh, I was a very good boy. I was only out till 1 a.m., which if I said that any other week correct. Of my life, I'd be like, what happened? Why was I out at 1 a.m.? What's wrong with me? But that was, for Indy, pretty good.
Not bad. Very responsible. I got the same question this morning. Somebody was like, how's your head? I was like, no, trust me. After 11 p.m., water only, yeah. I'm fine.
Very smart move. All right. We're not here to just talk about the Indianapolis bar scene, although we could do a full hour on that. We are back with another edition of Mock Draft Monday, the segment, the show that people absolutely love. You know it. You love it. It's essentially we get the analyst here, a draft expert like EJ, to give us five player-to-team fits that they absolutely love, plus a prospect they're willing to stand on the table for. I can't wait to see all of EJ's picks here. So with that, let's get into Mock Draft Monday. All right, EJ, give us your first player-to-team fit that you absolutely love. And I should let the people know, too, I was texting you about doing the show, and I was like, do you do mock drafts? You're like, no, not really. I was like, well, can you come up with five player-to-team fits that you really like that are pretty realistic? No problem about it, buddy. So we will direct the people to your channel and everything like that, but there's no real mock draft that they can go click into. This is just an actual free-flowing exercise, so a little twist here on Mock Draft Monday, but give me your first player-to-team fit that you absolutely love.
Yeah, so we should let everybody know as well that this is not what I think will happen. This isn't necessarily even the smartest move. This is just me fantasizing about player abilities in a system.
A true fan fiction exercise.
Correct. So on that note, I've got Tanner Colziol, the tight end from Houston.
Okay.
And I've got him going to Tennessee.
I have no idea who this guy is whatsoever.
I know, which is fantastic.
You did this to me last year,
too. I know,
too,
and it was great.
It's like, I don't know who that guy is at all, but okay. I think it was Bashel Tootin last year.
Correct.
Which, you know what? Ended up being a big talking point on the podcast, so shout out to you for that one. We'll see what happens with him in year two. But anyways, okay, go for it. Number one, say the name again.
Yeah, Tanner Colziol.
Okay.
So, tight end from Houston, but runs like a wide receiver. He is 6'7", 250, but actually moves like a wide receiver. He's got double moves. You see him using leverage against defensive backs. He's got real speed. He uses his size, which is not all that common for guys that big. Sometimes you see guys who are really big and their body catchers and their radius is like this. He'll go up and moss guys. So if you're talking about getting a young quarterback, a target that they can go to no matter what, Tanner Colziol is going to give them that. And it's like Tennessee's tried over and over again, and they've gotten tight ends that we like, but it just hasn't worked out for one reason or another. Now you think you have your guy at quarterback, go give him some targets, and we see this more often in the NFL. This is happening. Tight ends are target two now. We saw it with Colston Loveland in Chicago last year, and he exploded, and that helped Caleb. Like, if you want to help your young quarterback, go get them a tight end that has wide receiver-like skills, and Tanner Colziol is that guy.
Interesting just overall thought process there from, number one, just taking a tight end for the tight end. Where do you think, like, range-wise he would go in the draft?
That's the one that's a lot harder, and that's why when I started, you and I talked about this last night, I started off and I was like, oh, I'm looking at all the teams and the needs and I'm trying to match players and it wasn't really working out. And when it started to click for me is like, I'm gonna pick five guys I like and I'm gonna look for the best possible system and just lock them in, because that's gonna be better content. Now, is he gonna end up there? Where is he gonna go in the draft? I think it's a strong tight end class. A lot of people are not talking about that, but it's not necessarily top heavy. We don't have those two or three guys that are going to be absolute
like a Brock
stars.
Bowers or Loveland or Tyler Warren.
But I think there's a lot of guys with skill sets that can fit in, and we're seeing more teams go to two tight ends, three tight ends. We're seeing it with the Rams. So it's just like what happens with wide receivers and then corners. Everybody needs two. Everybody needs three. Now you all need four. You can't compete. Tight ends, it used to be, oh, you could have one good one and one 1A and you're fine. And now you need 1A, 2, 2A, maybe even 3 or 4.
And it'll be a big shift, too, for Tennessee, which was one of the more 11 personnel-heavy teams last year. Obviously, it's a new coaching staff, but Brian Daboll, pretty 11 personnel-heavy in New York as well. They were one of the more kind of static offenses when Nate and I talked about this one. So I think there's a lot of ways where, and I want to get your thoughts on Cam Ward heading into year two as well. I think there's a lot of ways where a pick like this can help them evolve. Gunnar Helm, I did think had some moments as a rookie too, but like you said, you essentially need two guys, not just from a, hey, we're, I do always think that the two, we're going to have two tight ends that are going to be our top two targets. No, you're not. But you're going to be able to have some formations that get the wide receivers open. We've seen that too, like these teams that bring in these heavier personnel packages. Like, yeah, obviously the tight end's a big part of it, but it gives you matchup advantages from a run-pass ratio standpoint to get those wide receivers vertical passes as well. Tennessee definitely needs a lot of wide receivers as well, but getting a tight end that maybe is more of a move guy that to go along with Gunnar Helm, like how do you think those two guys would complement each other?
I think they'd do very well because neither one of them is going to be a tip. I like Gunnar Helm. I thought his game was underrated. I was happy to see Tennessee get him. He had two games last year that made me think, okay, it's there.
Flashes. Nate brought him up on the show in the middle of the season, be like, this is a guy that's actually showing some flashes like people should be paying attention to. And I every time I've heard Daniel Jeremiah talk about the Tennessee Titans, he brings up like how people there are really excited about Gunnar Helm. So when DJ says something, I'm listening to that as well.
Absolutely. So I love Gunnar Helm. This isn't a replacement. It's a, how can we get another piece that, again, doesn't tip our hand? Either one of those are big enough to run block. Both of them are big enough to run block. Both of them can run routes. So now you're like, oh, we're lining up with two tight ends on the outside or two tight ends on the same side. Oh, we're going in motion. We're going four verts with two tight ends.
Right.
Keep up.
Yeah, it's really exciting. And just kind of give me your thoughts on Cam Ward as a player heading into year two. Like, what do they need to do besides getting our guy Tanner here.
Yeah.
What else do they need to do to sort of get him kind of back on track?
Well, I think Brian Daboll coming to town is a good thing. He just did this with Jackson Dart. Again, a guy that has ability and played a bit loose, certainly in the quarterback run game, but also with the ball. Like, Jackson Dart's not afraid to, like, cut it loose. Cam Ward had to cut it loose. There was no other option. It was him playing desperation ball for a lot of it, and he still flashed. So, again, being able to sort of rein that in, not cut it off, not take out that excitement factor, but say a little bit like Andy Reid did with Patrick Mahomes in the first year of like, hey, we have a rule here. 2.5 seconds, I own you. After that, you go be you.
Yeah. No, that's a great way of saying it. I said this a lot on the show last year that I have not seen a team like the Tennessee Titans that was just from a fantasy standpoint where there was just literally nothing.
Yes.
I mean, Tony Pollard actually had an insane run in the fantasy playoffs, but good luck if you made it to your fantasy playoffs with Tony Pollard on your roster. That's like a minor miracle. But yeah. I mean, truly, like, there was nothing there.
Right.
Like, no outside receivers. Like, Elik Iomanner and these guys, I don't know if there's anything there. I wasn't really the biggest fan of his as a prospect.
Neither.
I thought he went actually in the right range. And I think, like, what we saw in year one, maybe he gets better and improves, but that's something that needs to be addressed. Chimier Dike did flash mostly as a kick returner, but like occasionally as a speed slot receiver. But again, nope, like, truly nobody you could play in fantasy. So there's like just we're at the ground. Like, it can only go up from here, essentially, for anybody involved with Tennessee.
Yeah, it is a wide open slate, and any of them can contribute. All of them can contribute. You can do it in different ways. Some people look at that and say, oh, that's really intimidating. You got nothing. And everybody else goes, really doesn't matter. You can go any way the draft lets you and just take advantage, which, if you're a smart GM, is the way to be. Like, we are not beholden to a position in a round. We are looking at our board, and we have lots of opportunities.
So give us just one more thing to know about Tanner before we move on.
I think it's how well he moves. We have a lot of tight ends that, you know, they run, but they're very linear.
Yeah.
Right? This guy's 6'7", 250. He just looks like a wide receiver that kept growing but didn't lose his skills. I literally have, like, line four of my notes is, has double moves, like, because he does it to a defensive back who looks at him like in disbelief. He's like, Get out of here. You're 6'7", 250, and you just double move me for a touchdown?
That's kind
what
of
are
same.
We doing?
Yeah.
But he just keeps doing it over and over again. Very fluid athlete for his size. And, you know, a tight end becomes that label, right? Everybody goes, oh, well, tight ends take a while to develop. I'm like, well, what if I just told you he was a 6'7", 250 wide receiver that ran like that, that jumped like that, that caught like that along the sidelines? You'd go, well, that sounds amazing. And to me, it is.
Do you have a player comparison? Anything he kind of reminds you?
It's funny. A lot of people have said Colby Parkinson, but I'm like, Colby wasn't that fluid. I was a huge Colby Parkinson fan, and he was big and fast and just didn't get taken advantage of in college because of his quarterback situation more than anything. But there was a ton of untapped potential. I look at Tanner Koziol, and it's like, yeah, but the edges are already smoothed off.
Yeah.
Like,
Tanner Koziol. Okay, first time I've ever hearing of this person.
There you go.
Pretty impressive. Okay, get to your next one here. What's your second player to team fit that you absolutely love?
And this is where I really started with player and thought, where would he do the most damage? And it's Skylar Bell, wide receiver from UConn.
I have not seen him yet. Okay. I've not charted him yet, but he is the reception. By the time this episode is out, I probably will have. But he is the current flavor of the week in the reception perception Discord. Like, when are you looking at Skylar Bell? When are you looking at Skylar Bell? So you're giving me, there's your buddy Brett Coleman walking past us right now. He was talking to me about this guy earlier today. So let's hear it. What do we got?
Now, Skylar Bell, not the biggest wide receiver, but he's not small. He's just under 6 foot. Biggest measurable that you should care about with Skylar Bell is hands. He has over 10-inch hands.
Wow.
Okay. Shows up on tape.
The Hopkins hands.
That's right. Very low drop rate in a much smaller package. But a lot of people are going to look at his frame and say, oh, he can only play inside, or he's only good in the short areas, or whatever else. To me, he very much is like a Tyler Lockett.
Okay.
He can play inside in the slot. He can play outside as well. He's going to give you some bonus on the boundary. Yes, you're going to work him mostly in the short to medium area, but he's very good there. And when he lulls you to sleep, when you decide, okay, he's caught enough 8-yard comebacks, and you jump it, he double moves you for the end zone and picks up a 25-yard explosive. And he has that ability too. Great yak ability. Really good vision when he catches the ball. I'd say a very quick processor of like putting the ball away and going, where are my surroundings? Where can I maximize that? And doing that most often. So really like Skylar Bell. My fit for him, Dallas.
Dallas. Interesting. Okay. Because I think they've got a pretty – obviously good 1-2 punch, and we're big fans on this show of Ryan Flournoy. Producer Colin, big Cowboys fan, turned me on to Ryan Flournoy, and I do hate to say it because I hate to give Colin any credit. Well, he was 100% right about that. So, give me the pitch on Skylar Bell here.
Well, the cool thing about Skylar Bell is that versatility of both size and alignment. So it's not taking snaps away from Flournoy, who I like and think is good. CD is CD, but you can play either one of those guys as the two, and again, not tip your hand.
Yeah.
And that gives you tremendous versatility. Dak's ability comes into this. This is really why I like the fit. His accuracy, his timing is going to maximize that yak potential from Skylar Bell. And you can say, all right, we're going to start this way. We're going to rotate. We're going to run Flournoy as a big slot. We're going to put Skylar Bell outside this rep. And none of that is limiting. It's not like, well, that's not really his best fit.
Sure.
Skylar Bell has that versatility size-wise, route-wise, breakdown wise, yards after the catch wise, like every way he can exceed in your offense. And I just think like Chadi did a really good job, better even than I thought in the first year.
Oh yeah.
Let's give him another tool. You just signed your running back who, you know, signed his reclamation contract. Great. You've got a good option at tight end. This fills out your wide receiver room and now makes you very difficult to defend.
Yeah.
Right. You were already good and now you kind of have to like just guess on any down. Which guy am I going to gamble on? Because they can all make plays.
Of course. And like theoretically, George Pickens franchise tagged, he'll be on this team. Of course, there's going to be trade speculation, whatever. But I'm assuming he's going to be with the Cowboys this year. Even then, like you do need a fourth guy, right? And if it's a one-year deal with Pickens, if it is the franchise tag, and like we'll see how that goes. If it's more of a year-by-year thing, they might need that depth. Because like they've kind of had – a rotation of guys beyond CD Lamb, like essentially the Jalen Tolberts of the world, who I kind of liked as a prospect. This is whatever player, not really a needle mover. Obviously, the Jonathan Mingo thing did not work out, was never going to work out. Don't know why they did that. So here we are. I think like having depth at that position and like you said, being able to be multiple and this guy lines up here, this guy lines up there. It's just funny with Pickens too, like. He's as old school as it gets as like a true X receiver. He took like 7% of his snaps in the slot this year. It is outrageous. He's over there doing his thing, kind of in it, living in his own world, and I mean that complimentary in that in this sense, living in his own world as that X over there, and then you've got these three guys now. If Skylar Bell's in the mix with CeeDee Lamb, Ryan Florney, and him, that can kind of just mix match off each other from a flanker slot perspective.
Yeah, no, I think it really does maximize him. I love Dak's ability as the trigger man in that scenario. Wouldn't work with any team.
Yeah.
There are definitely quarterbacks who are going to lock in on certain targets, and it would be kind of a wasted pick, or really a pick for the future where you're stashing him and saying, hey, we know Pickens is going to be gone in a year. We want to be developing this guy.
Right.
You, with Shoddy and Dak, that combination, you can use him right now and get value.
Yeah, that was something actually when CeeDee Lamb was on our show at the Super Bowl when I asked about Ryan Flournoy. You know, he's like, I tell this guy all the time, in big games, like, that's when we're going to need you.
Right.
You know, we're and getting more options like that. If we think about it from a fantasy standpoint, we're like, oh, how many targets is he really going to get year one? And obviously that would be the case on a team like this, is he's not going to be, you know, a year one starter or anything like that. But for those big moments, those big games, like, that's how you stamp yourself and continue to get opportunities going forward. So I like that pick a lot. I, again, like I said, I haven't charted Skylar Bell yet, so I'm excited to get into it at some point here soon. But give me your third player to team fit that you absolutely love.
This might be one of my favorites in the entire exercise, because as soon as I saw it, I couldn't unsee it. And I know you have those matches where you're like, oh,
yeah, like,
wait.
Please let this happen,
right.
Essentially.
And the downside of this particular one is I think the chances of it happening for multiple reasons are very low. I'm just going to forego all that and say, if this happened, I would be over the moon. This is Kenyon Sadiq, the tight end from Oregon. Ultra athletic. Basically, Evan Engram with even better movement skills and blocks.
Yeah.
They use him in all kinds of alignments and formations at Oregon. We're talking about tap passes, sweeps. He's a better than advertised blocker. He gives you very good effort. He's also quite strong for his size. He reminds me very much of a CMC in terms of he's maximized his frame. He's not the tallest guy.
Sure.
He's incredibly fit, very strong, very quick, fluid with the ball, great that part of his hands. But the whole reason that I would send him to the San Francisco 49ers.
Ooh, okay. I thought you were building up to Denver because you said Evan Engram and all that. So, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this. So let's go.
Right. So if you're going to send him to the 49ers, which again, I don't think is tremendously likely, you're future-proofing yourself. Kittle struggled with injuries. We don't know if he's coming back. We think he is, but for how long?
Right.
Like, you better start something else. And in that offense, in Shanahan's offense, he loves multiple pieces. He loves to move Juszczyk out to H-back, tight end, whatever. He loves to flex CMC into the slot, right? Imagine a tight end who is going to be able to replicate some piece of Juwan Jennings, CMC, Juszczyk on any particular snap.
Yeah.
And he can play running back. Mm-hmm. Now, he's a little big to play running back.
Yes, yeah,
but
sure.
He is athletic enough to do it. They did it with him in Oregon. They gave him designated carriers from different alignments. And you just give Shanahan, of all people, one more multiple piece that can be aligned anywhere, used in any role, rushing the ball, catching the ball, blocking, which is huge to that. That's one of the biggest things about Kittle being out of the lineup, is they've gotten production from their tight ends, but not in the run game.
So true. Yep, such a good point. The splits when he's on and off the field are dramatic in the run game in particular.
So you're future-proofing yourself against that loss, but right now you're also giving yourself one more multiple piece that defense is just kind of everybody has to prepare for him, and there's nobody better in the NFL that maximizing a matchup.
Yeah.
Right? I'm going to move Kenyon Sadiq onto your weakest defender, and weakest is defined by the play.
Sure.
And then make sure he goes off and he's got the ability to pay that off.
I'm really excited about this one for a variety of reasons, because you said, like, it's not that strong of a tight end class, and maybe we don't have as much at the top. Like, I don't think that this guy's like in the Brock Bowers category or the Colson Loveland category, but how do you see him before we get back to the Niners thing? Like, just Kenyon Sadiq, like, how do you kind of slot him in as a tight end here?
Yeah, I think he probably goes off at the top of the tight end list in this draft,
sure,
because he is explosive and everybody's looking at year one Colson Loveland production and going, hey,
how do we get me some of that?
I see what you did for the Bears. Can you do that for me? And Kenyon Sadiq is probably the easiest plug and play answer in this draft.
Okay.
So he's going to be a hot commodity, which is one of the reasons I probably think he won't end up in San Francisco. That's not their biggest need. But if John Lynch were to take the gambit, I think it would pay dividends not only this year, but for years to come.
Well, I do think, though, maybe tight end in and of itself, if you're just looking at TE, isn't necessarily their biggest need. But I would argue that, like, wide receiver might be up there. You know, I mean, I love Ricky Pearsall, but obviously did not stay on the field consistently last year. I think they need another bigger body to kind of take him off the line of scrimmage and be able to move around and be more of a consistent separator. But like, that's it. Like, and I love Ricky Pearsall, but he's still like an idea of a player more so than a formed reality. And like I said, that's it. Like, they don't have anybody else there that really can command targets or execute those assignments at this point, because it's a lot of guys who have also struggled with injuries or are mostly just depth players. So I would argue that that is a big need. But if they're getting a pass catcher who can be used in multiple ways, like, that does kind of fulfill a thing that they do certainly need on that roster.
Yeah, I think it does plug a hole. And again, with players like Colson Loveland, I know I keep referencing him, but coming in and being...
Well, you know how this is how it is, though. Like, you're doing this because the teams are going to be doing this.
Yeah.
It's these, like, okay, who was good last year? Like, how do we get that? Right. How do we find our Nicky Manwari? Like,
exactly.
Well, easier said than done.
True enough. And the same for Colson. But one of the things about Colson that made him so good was, even when he wasn't catching the ball, he was blocking at a higher level than a lot of people who didn't pay attention to that were expecting. And he is one tough customer in the run game. Sadiq is the same way. A lot of people look at him and they go, oh, he's a little bit shorter, he's really fast, he's fluid, he must not be able to block. And then you go and watch the footage.
He can bow up. Oh, yeah, he can definitely, I mean, get out there, like, clear things out in the run game, dig stuff out. Like, he's impressive in that regard, at least, you know, to my non-charting eyes, because I won't be doing that tight end charting. But, yeah, he's definitely an interesting player. I think the move-around skills, this is going to come out after the testing, so I can probably just go ahead and say, like, he ripped up the combine.
Yeah,
we know he's going to do it. It's funny you bring him up and you talk about him going to San Francisco, and I do agree, like, he'd be great there. I think George would be a good mentor to him as well. Like, he's a guy that I think is probably willing to do that at this point in his career. And with the injury too, like, yeah, Kittle might be available maybe even earlier than we thought because of, like, the type of Achilles tear that he had. He might be available early next season, but is he going to be himself? Like, probably not. And Achilles at that age, like, will he be himself ever again? I think it's time to start thinking about that succession plan, considering how important that is. And when Nate and I were talking about Sadiq on 301, I believe it was yesterday, I kind of said, like, yeah, the build, he rips up the combine, maybe some, like, Vernon Davis to him, you know, not a completely formed player. And I believe Vernon Davis overlapped with Shanahan in Washington, like, later in his career, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and Vernon Davis was, again, a player before his time.
Oh, totally.
You know, he would have been so good in today's NFL, and we see those guys. But Sadiq is that guy, and he's the guy of the moment. And, you know, I could see it as possible. But, again, we're seeing tight ends who are true pass catchers become true number twos. It's not the sort of two-way. It's like, look, we have our wide receiver one.
And a lot of times in this offense, you know, maybe the targets don't say it, but, like, production and efficiency-wise, a lot of times Kittle's been the one.
Correct. So, again, filling that role and not leaving yourself up to the fates, regardless of injury and age and everything else, and starting that process now and getting production right off the crack, it's an attractive package.
I like it a lot. I think this would be one of those, like, post-draft risers, even if, again, the opportunity's not right there in particular in year one. It's like, oh, Kittle's blocking it, but it might be a better landing spot than maybe you think on the surface. So that's a good one. And you went with, like, a sliding scale there for your first three picks. You start off with some guy I've completely never heard of.
You know I have to.
Completely never heard of. And I was like, okay, a wide receiver I know, I haven't seen yet, but I know the name. And then I was like, okay, yeah, I know Kenyon Sadiq. I've seen Kenyon Sadiq. Like, so that was good stuff by you there. We are going to take our first quick break. When we come back, we're going to get more favorite player to team fits from our guy EJ here. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back on another edition of Mock Draft Monday with EJ Snyder, who's giving us his favorite player to team fits. Let's get into your fourth player. Where are we sending him?
I'm going to keep you right in the pocket here. This one you've probably heard of, Jadarian Price, the second running back from Notre Dame. Everybody's talking about Jeremiah Love, and rightfully so. Tremendous player, but reminds me very much of the Bijan situation in Texas with Roshan behind him. Now, Roshan hasn't panned out, but
he's had his moments, you know.
Very high hopes for him. And I have the same for Jadarian Price. I think he is a very good runner who is getting less attention than he should.
Okay.
And could even sneak into the back end of the first round, regardless of where he goes. We're talking about Minnesota Vikings.
Oh, I love this. I think this is a sneaky one. So go ahead. Let it rip. What do we got?
This is looking at the Vikings and saying you're probably going to be starting JJM at quarterback.
You think?
I hope not. But
if you have to.
But if you have to, what better than a strong running game, right? Okay, You're going to be looking at eight-man boxes until he proves that he can hurt you. You need somebody who can pay that off. That means you need a back with size, power, who's a violent runner, choppy steps. All of that is Jadarian Price. You need to be able to get some kind of efficiency out of that because teams are going to be squatting on it until JJ can prove that he can do otherwise.
Yeah.
And right now, you have a veteran back who's very savvy, but also has a lot of mileage and a bunch of dings. And that's not a great recipe. Hey, man, we're going to give you a lot of very tough carries with not good looks. Again, good mentor situation, but you need to start succession planning.
Well, and Aaron Jones might not even be on the roster.
Correct.
You know, he might be a cap casualty as well. So, like, Jordan Mason, nice player, but they would need another body there for sure.
Absolutely. So KOC gets some explosiveness out of the run game that basically bails him out, gives his quarterback, no matter who it is, a little bit of breathing room to get in. And then, look, you can develop the rest of it. But if you don't have that, how are you going to get it? It's very hard to duplicate if you don't have those bodies, if you don't have that talent at running back. I think Price is incredibly talented. He's going to be available. It's a bigger need than I think a lot of people are talking about. So I just love the player ability to team need fit here.
I want to talk about the running back class as a whole here in just a second, but just pulling on this thread, I love that you sent a running back to Minnesota because I made this point to Jory Epstein yesterday on our show. I said, you know, this Minnesota ecosystem, I think, has kind of gotten a little bit overrated. Mm. Like obviously, Justin Jefferson is incredible. Jordan Addison is a good number two receiver. They have no depth behind those guys. They traded for Adam Thielen. That was a bizarre trade at the time, and it didn't age well. Hockenson is not the player that he used to be, might not be on the roster. And then you get to the running back room. I think that's where kind of the crux of this thought of mine comes from is that, like, yeah, obviously JJ McCarthy didn't work out, but a lot of the other bets that they made on the ecosystem didn't come to pass either. The whole thought process was, well, number one, we're going to have this great defense, which they do have a great defense. We're going to have this great defense, and then we're going to be able to counterbalance that with an offensive line that we invested into, and then that running game is really going to flourish, which will keep McCarthy in positive down and distance situations. And none of that, I mean, I don't know if any of that would have mattered, if that would have, like, saved McCarthy necessarily, who still is a very inexperienced player and is constantly on and off the field. But they were never that team last year because this run game never got going because the offensive line wasn't healthy. And so obviously you do need the line to stay healthy and be consistent this year more than it was last year. But I just never really felt that, like, Jordan Mason was a guy that's like, okay, well, if you're going to, you need to be in those positive down and distance situations, like, you know, you use him as more of a pounder, but you still need the home run element. Is Aaron Jones that guy at this point anymore? So I think you're right to point out that this is sneakily a pretty big need for this Vikings team.
Yeah, and where they're going to be picking, they're going to catch a lot less flack than whoever picks Love.
Because
Love's probably going top 10, and everybody's going to have the value discussion, and there's going to be some very bright lights on that situation. You go ahead and pick, you know, Jadarian Price at, you know, 25, 28, like down the board.
Yeah.
That's not where the Vikings are, but, you know, you get him.
Second round or something like that.
Right, top of the
second. Yeah.
Like, you are out of that conversation. He comes out and plays well, plays solidly. Mm-hmm. You're golden.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So you see him as kind of, is he the second back to you in this class?
I don't know that he's the second back, but I have him solidly in the top five.
Okay.
And again, it's more of a, DJ said this is a flavors draft, and that's one of my favorite lines of the entire week.
That's what I've been saying about the receivers.
It is absolutely a flavors draft. So not everybody's going to be looking at him as their top option, but if you want that type, he's going to be one of your top two or three because he's that good.
Yeah, skill set wise, it would make a lot of sense, I think. We're hunting for explosive plays. You think this is a guy that can provide that for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so just this running back class as a whole, and I know because you love the position.
I do.
You love to study running backs. Like, I've just seen it more painted as it's a one running back class. Like, it's Love, and then it kind of drops off a cliff there. Maybe do you view it that way, or do you think what's the kind of class look like here?
Well, I think a lot of times when we say it's a one running back class, top heavy is one of those things that we get really hung up on. Star power, right? And like the cornerback class, which you're maybe not familiar with this year, but there's a big group in the sort of second and third round that could be starters outside. Those are very valuable players, but there's not like sauce.
Sure.
Right?
Right.
There's maybe one guy that's like that. And everybody goes, well, it's a weak cornerback class. And I'm like, not if you can get a starter outside in round two or three.
Yeah.
And running back feels not quite that talented to me, but there are talented guys down the board who will contribute and be NFL backs. But if you're looking for that sort of star power guy, there's sort of... anywhere from 3 to 5, depending on who you believe in. But Love is clearly the most talented. Then there's a drop. There's a gap. Then there's 2 or 3 other guys. And then there's just flavors, right? We need a pass catcher. We need a banger. We need a guy that can hit outside zone reliably. Like, those guys are all still there. Yeah. And available for values. They're going to be there in third, fourth round.
And I think that when we discuss running backs, especially in fantasy, it is all about opportunity, right?
Like, correct.
Who's going to get that early opportunity to kind of take, quite literally, take the ball and run with it, you know? And I mean, last year, a guy in the 7th round, Kyle Manungai, yep, ended up being that. I don't remember what you thought about Manungai as a prospect, but it's just like that was exactly the type of kind of hammerhead that they needed alongside Swift. So that's what you're looking for in this class. It's like, where do you get that opportunity? And can you just kind of take it and run?
Yeah, it was the perfect situation for Manungai. He, again, exceeded expectations. I thought he was going to be good. He was better than that because he landed in Ben Johnson run game. He had Eric Bieniemy in his position coach. He was able to split, you know, carries reliably. He didn't have to be the guy, but they also put a load on him in important moments.
Totally.
And like everything, he hit all the green lights and he got faster.
Yeah.
Like, I've had this conversation multiple times. He got faster than he was at Rutgers.
Do you remember the clip? It was like early, early camp where Eric Bieniemy, you just mentioned, said to Kyle Manungai, like, that's an old man looking run or something like that. Because, yeah, that was the negative, he wasn't the fastest back in the world.
Pick him up and put him down, son.
That's right, yeah.
He got the message, and he comes out. I mean, the only backfield in the NFL with 2 starters to have more than 750 yards was Chicago.
Yeah.
And Manungai was half of that. So, tremendous, one of those things we always hope happens, right?
Yeah.
We want to see this player maximized, regardless of skill set, coaching, offensive system, and all those things happen, which is rare.
And for a guy like Price and for this particular fit, this is one of those teams with that opportunity where, listen, if you come in there, and yeah, they gave Jordan Mason like an extension. Like I said, I don't know if Aaron Jones is going to be on the roster because they do need to save money cap-wise. But if you come in there, you're just better than the guy that they gave a little – 2-year kind of extension to, like, yeah, you could be a starter and touch the ball 150 plus times in your rookie year. And this is one of the, it's hard to find. There's not a lot of open running back spots out there. I'm sure you've thought about this too. Like, you just start kind of going down the board. And this is why I think it is tough to like find where Jeremiah Love is going to go in the first round of the draft, because it's just like, well, there's just not that many spots that need like a clear cut starter, but this is definitely one of them.
Yeah. And the things that might happen to open more of those up won't happen until after the draft.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know,
exactly.
If it was an injury or, you know, somebody holds out, those are all going to happen after the draft.
Totally.
So you're, I'm not saying going on faith, because I think Love is a transcendent player. He's a tremendous athlete. He's an asset in the passing game. He gives you your explosives, which are, you know, the magic pixie dust in the NFL
right now, of course,
in the run game. That's what we want, is explosives. We don't care about yards or number of touches. We need, you know, a higher percentage.
Yeah, we got plenty of grinders. We need home run hitters.
Yeah, we need boosts. So when you look at that, yeah, there are fewer chairs than you think. And you're looking for guys that, again, I can't do this in the aggregate, right? I don't need 3 backs. I need one. If I have one of those spots, I need one guy. And the other thing that would really help Price in Minnesota, as you said, is the line, when healthy, is better than average.
Totally.
Like, you're not coming in behind a building or young or depleted line. If those guys are out there, you could start putting up yards week one.
Yeah, especially if Christian Darrisaw is himself. Like, that was a big problem last year. Okay, let's get to your fifth and final player to team fit that you absolutely love.
I think you're going to like this one, both because of the player and the fit. So, we are talking about Bryce Lance.
Okay.
Wide receiver.
Trey Lance's brother.
Trey Lance's little brother. Not that little.
No, not little at all.
Not little at all. North Dakota State wide receiver. And a lot of people will say, North Dakota State, offensive linemen, running backs, running quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
We talking about a wide receiver from North Dakota State. Things have changed out in the prairies. North Dakota State is a passing team now.
Okay.
And Bryce Lance is the primary recipient of that. And I am going to send him to the New Orleans Saints.
That is a wide receiver room that does need some help. So, okay, let's hear the pitch.
Yeah, we're going to put him opposite Chris Olave, who, again, has had trouble staying healthy, but when healthy, has been really good.
Awesome, yeah.
And can go deep, has the speed to do that, can work the intermediate and crossing routes if he wants to. Lance is explosion in a bottle, and he reminds me very much of Watson in Green Bay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
A completely different Packers offense when Watson is there versus Watson is not.
Because
defenses can sit on you. They have all those other number twos. None of them scare you deep, so you just sit on everything. Watson comes in. Well, now he can go 80 in one play.
Yeah.
I have to respect that. And he does, right? They'll throw him three a game and he pays off two. And that's enough. It tilts the field in Green Bay's favor when he's there. New Orleans doesn't have a guy like that right now. But they do have a quarterback that can throw it up there. And Shuck proved to be better than I think almost anybody thought in the first year. So now's the time to push the gas, right? You got Kellen Moore, who, again, a little bit like Shoddy, I think overperformed in year one, definitely with developing the quarterback. Give him more targets. Let's see what we can do. Let's push the gas down. Lance is that guy. He's explosive. He's fluid. He reminds me a little bit of Gonzalez, the corner from New England, in terms of he plays in a very athletic but not rigid style, which helps him along the sideline. He can pay it off. He's got great speed. He's got great size. He's like 6'3", 6'4", fast, can outrun even fast players in the secondary. He just gives you another element. And again, you've got wide open opportunity in that room. You really have Olave and you got a tight end, and that's about it. Yeah. So you need targets. You need multiples. Now that you have a quarterback that you think is there and can throw it and can operate your system, you need to give him sort of the grist for the mill. And Lance would be that. The opportunity would be there, and he would be a candidate for one of those players that could hit the ground running and make a huge difference in terms of how defenses play the Saints.
Man, I am low-key, perhaps troublingly, interested in this in the Saints this offseason. And that feels weird to say, but it comes down to the two of the guys that you mentioned there, which is Tyler Shuck and Kellen Moore, who I agree with you, totally overperformed. Shuck, to me, and you highlighted this, and I think Lance would be a good fit here if he is this like kind of Christian Watson type of player. One of the things that really stood out with me was Shuck, and I didn't know that I expected this from him, was he would just sit in the pocket and, like, from the far hash, launch the ball deep outside the numbers. And to our point here, who else do they have other than Chris Olave to catch those passes? They don't. And the other thing, I think, coming back to Kellen Moore, is that he gives you some of those free releases as a receiver because he moves these guys around so much. There's so much motion at the snap. I love the motion in that offense there. It creates a lot of leverage for those wideouts. And Christian Watson, I think, needs some of that in Green Bay. Lance probably does as well. He's going to get those opportunities in this offense.
Yeah, I agree with that. And again, coming from a school that has a long tradition of the run game, he understands how to block and has the grit to do it when he needs to. But yes, they do move him around. They are all about orbit motion and jet sweeps. And hey, can we give you things that look like carries that turn into, oh, you're releasing through the A-gap?
Yeah.
Like all kinds of crazy stuff like that. And he is down with it because, again, it is a matchup that he can win. He can win down the field. He can win on the sideline. He can get you chunk plays. Again, when you are behind the sticks and you have a quarterback with a strong arm, you are not out of it. And as a defense, you now need to decide, do I leave Chris Olave alone? Like, I'm still kind of afraid of Chris Olave.
Yeah.
But this other kid's put up, you know, three touchdowns in the last 2 weeks. I don't want to leave him alone either. Now what are we doing?
Yeah, it was always funny to me at the end of last year. You know, I don't know if you saw the clips of, like, Kellen Moore give in the locker room post game where he'd give out, like, 10 game balls.
Sure.
Which apparently, like, the players just really love because it's just authentically him. Like, that's just who he is. And I just always remember the one where he's like, and Kevin Austin, two catches for 33 yards, gets a game ball. It's like, that's your, like, number two threat.
Okay,
okay, all right, cool. But that's what's so interesting about the Saints team, too, is that outside of Olave and Shuck, and I think a pretty underrated offensive line, they're kind of blank slate-ish to me at all of the skill positions. Like, I mean, the Kamara thing, like, I don't know what they'll do contract-wise there, but I think it's time to look to the future at position. At tight end, like, Juwan Johnson, he's a converted wide receiver, and he's essentially a wide receiver. Like, I actually think they could use an inline tight end to allow them to be more multiple because they were so three-receiver heavy this year. And like we said, Chris Olave, he's great, going to get an extension, but the wide receiver room is a blank slate there. Like, I'm weirdly excited about this Saints team, and we actually don't really know who's going to be lining up on offense, but if they come from the draft – like this guy specifically, or at the running back position, those guys could be real, like, post-draft risers and dynasty rookie drafts and things of that nature.
I think it brings a lot of excitement to the fan base, which they could use.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
And to be able to say,
I remember talking
hope springs eternal is
great. I remember
great.
Talking to Adam from the Saints Block Party podcast here at the Combine last year, and just, like, the tone and tenor of the Saints at that point, it was so miserable.
Yep.
And that continued all throughout the offseason.
Yeah.
Really, pretty much into the season, and then by the end of the year, there's like, I think we might have something here, and that's what quarterbacks can do for you.
Absolutely. It can ab- it can turn around your entire outlook. And right now you're seeing that kind of demeanor from Steelers fans.
Yeah.
On offense, they're like, oh, here again.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Do we still have to do this? And Saints fans were there and had been there for a while. And then, you know, you draft Tyler Shuck and they're like, okay.
Yeah.
And by mid-year, he's playing well. He's staying healthy. He's definitely starting to vibe with the head coach, which is the most important relationship in the NFL between the play caller and the quarterback. And you're like, oh, do we?
Yeah.
Is this real?
And what do you think his ceiling is? Like, because I don't want to get too over my skis here with the Tyler Shuck thing. Like, and bring the prospect profile into the mix here, what you saw in year one. Like, what do you think the ceiling is for him as a quarterback?
Well, he erased, again, we talked about Kyle Manungai getting faster, right? Biggest knock against him was he just wasn't fast. He got faster. Great. That makes him a more whole player. With me, Shuck, the inconsistency, there were at least two throws a game. I mean, there was the one from the combine that I filmed. Yes, I'm responsible for that.
That is true. You are kind of the anti-Shuck sleeper cell.
I just said, what is this? And it was not just a combine throw.
Hey, you're just asking questions.
I know. To clear the air, it's like, this is something that shows up on tape at least once a game. He just airballs.
Yeah.
And you can't have that in the pros. In college, 55, 60 downs, whipping the ball all over the yard. You got a couple of throwaways, who cares?
Yeah.
But he had some dangerous throws where it just, you couldn't tell what the process was.
Totally.
And then he did that at the combine. He's talked about his justification for that, which is great. But it was like, this is concerning.
Yeah.
He got rid of that. Like, Kellen Moore legislated that out of him effectively, which you couldn't say for sure that was going to happen. But the other thing was the health. But it was mostly, if you looked into it, like broken bones.
Yeah.
Now, calling somebody injury prone is a very difficult proposition in this league, but he needed to stay away from injury and he needed to ditch those 1 to 2 plays a game where he just turned his brain off.
Yeah.
He did both. Well, guess what? What you're left with is a very experienced starter that had a very good arm, and he's taken away all the negatives and the positives remain. He's matched up in a good system. All the green lights. We talked about this. It's rare, but when it happens, it's exciting, and it can vault a franchise from, I don't really have any hope here, to maybe we should start building.
Right. Older prospect, we do wonder like what the developmental path is there at this point. But, I mean, man, I saw a lot that I really liked, and I just don't want to get – again, I don't want to get too over my skis here.
I would say top half of the NFL. Yeah, I would say a top 15 starter is well within his reach, and I'm not going to cap him there and say he's not going to ascend past that, but I'm also not going to push him into the top 10 because, look, all of those things could still happen.
Yeah.
He could have regression and get derailed in season two. And then we're like, well, what is he really? Very much the Jaden Daniels situation, right?
Totally.
Year one, oh my goodness. Year two, okay, let's see year three.
And I think that Jaden Daniels example is instructive. Beyond the health part of it, my concern with the Commanders last year was just, I don't think we did enough to surround the young quarterback with explosive young talent. A lot of older guys, you know, run back the Zach Ertz thing, kind of, there was like, oh, we got a new running back. Yeah, well, he was 7th round pick. Like, what are you really going to get there? We talked about Kyle Manungai. I think the JCM example was a little bit more, okay, we had a good player. You probably outkicked a 7th round pick, but didn't really go all in to get those sort of young talents there. I think the Saints have an opportunity to, take a guy like Lance as a project player later on and hit receiver early. I mean, Devon Vele is like a nice maybe wide receiver 3 for them. Sure, like big slot type. They can use those players, but like tight end, running back, they have a lot of opportunity, I think, to really hit this offense pretty hard, and that is how you stave off the regression for your second year quarterback. Okay, we are going to take our last break. We come back. It's the prospect that EJ is willing to stand on the table for. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back, and it is time for EJ to stand on the table.
Well, Captain, my captain.
Sit down, Mr. Anderson.
We have Bills Mafia here.
Let's go,
EJ, through the table.
All right, EJ, give us the prospect It could be one guy, it could be two guys, whatever. But like, give us a prospect you are willing to stand on the table for in the 2026 NFL draft.
I like that you've made it stand on the table and not pound on the table.
No.
Did you see Daniel Jeremiah's unfortunate incident with his table?
I literally replied to him. I was like, when pounding on the table goes too far. Yeah, he has a glass desk. He had a glass. We can put the picture up on the screen here on Twitter because he tweeted this out. It's a glass desk, which is kind of
iffy,
questionable for sure. On carpet too, like you gotta move. Like it's over. You're not getting that glass out of the carpet. That was kind of a curious choice, especially again when you're a draft guy, you gotta pound on that table for the prospect.
I sent him a picture of mine, which is a solid slab of wood. I said, look, I know my limitations. I get excited. I can't afford a glass table.
And you can stand on that table. Yeah, you probably can't. Yeah. But you know, you're looking good. You're in shape. You're looking good. You're slimming down. Like you could maybe stand on that glass table at this point. Let me tell you what.
I'm not going to do it.
I got too much mass to be standing on that glass table. I would never ever do that. But let's get a prospect that you would stand on the table for.
All right, prospect I would stand on the table for. I said I like this tight end class. I think there's a lot of really interesting players here, and one of them is one of them that I'm going to highlight. For this, it's Michael Trigg, tight end from Baylor, and I see shades of a young Darren Waller. And Darren Waller, before he got off the rails, was that guy.
Yeah,
he was incredibly athletic. He was the prototype in the passing game, and Trigg has that explosive bent to him. He doesn't like to quit. There's a great highlight of them when they played Auburn. He catches like a 3 or 4 yard pass. He gets swarmed by 2 or 3 guys. The announcer's like, oh, you know. He keeps going. Auburn players keep coming up. He gets another 7 yards with 8 Auburn guys on him. He's like, Michael Trigg has a 1-on-8, and he's winning it. And I'm like, yeah, it's a great prospect. But you're talking about an explosive guy in the passing game with great size who is a polished pass catcher, polished route runner, who can be a difference maker as a 1, as a 2, as a move option. Tons of skills. Very attractive prospect. I think he's going to blow up the combine as well. He's one of those Baylor's guys that's super fit.
Sure.
He's going to run like a deer. And I think a lot more people after this week, well, this is airing after that, but, you know.
Now that he has blown up the combine, obviously.
In post-history, nobody was talking about Michael Trigg before the combine. No, it's not that he's an unknown player. He comes from a solid conference and everything else, but I think he's getting a little bit lost.
Yeah.
And it was one of those guys when you put the tape on, you watch one, you're like, I don't know, that looks pretty good. Maybe that's just the one. You watch another one, and you're like, I don't know, that looks pretty good too. And then you're like, God, this guy's got a lot of skills. Like,
sure.
I'm starting to feel better about this tight end class. And Trigg was a big reason why for that early in the process for me, kind of October, November. I was like, nobody's even talking about this guy?
Yeah.
Like, he's pretty good.
Interesting. And that when we look at this tight end class, I think finding those kind of sleeper names, deeper names will be critical. If he does test really well at the combine, that's usually how you can get yourself on the map. Because it's just one of those positions where we talked about earlier, like, is it always a slow developing picture?
Used to be.
It certainly
seems like it shifted.
Certainly used to be, but I think the guys that maybe, like, great example is Terrence Ferguson from last year's draft. And I was talking about him with Brett earlier today where it's like, that guy is like truly a deer. Like he's so fast, he's so explosive. Still clearly learning how to play football, you know.
a young Bambi.
He's learning how to like track the football and cleanly catch it in the NFL, which those windows close a lot faster when you get to the pros. It's a whole different thing. However, he was so valuable to this Rams team. I know he didn't put up the fantasy production, but like this year might be the year he does that. But in the ways where he was just clearing so much space out because he's one of the fastest tight ends in the NFL, which again, I know that doesn't sound sexy or whatever. Like, oh, Terrence Ferguson's not putting up. Well, the reason Puka Nacua is going crazy is because they're getting in 13 personnel and they have a tight end who can actually clear space.
Yeah.
Sounds like this could maybe be a similar sort of thing.
Very much so. If the coach, wherever he goes, chooses to use him that way, you're going to have to respect him because of the size-speed combo.
Yeah.
And the fact that he can pay off receptions. He doesn't have stones for hands at all. Like,
right.
He has good hands as well. So it is a legitimate threat that's going to draw gravity in a defense and open up other options, even if it's not for him, but it could be for him. And then, as you know, defenses will start to forget.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they run him as a clear out.
Yeah.
Put the linebacker on him.
Right.
Good luck.
Yeah,
and he's going to be gone.
He's wide open down the field, and then you get those explosive plays. And the way teams, again, are getting so much heavier now, there's more 12, there's more 13. Like, that is the evolution that we're seeing right now. Who do you think is, like, a team that's doing that the best? Maybe
Well, the leaders are the ones you talk about. Yeah. McVay leading the way with 13, and everybody else doing the copycat thing that we talked about earlier. Well, if they're doing it, in fact, I was on Jaguars podcast yesterday, and they said, look, GM came from the Rams.
Yep, they want to be doing
Are we going to be doing the McVay thing? We're already not coming to the combine. Like, are we going to follow suit and be big in 13? Do I need to study the tight end classes? Well, you should study the tight end class anyways, because I think there's a lot of good players there, but you know, I wouldn't bet against it.
That's a good. That is a really good call, because I think Brenton Strange emerged as a guy that is a two-way player. Like, he could. Yes. He's a guy that doesn't. He kind of was one of those like Evan Engram types coming to the league, which I remember that it was like, man, why are the Jags taking him? Like, this is too duplicative of what they already. They literally had Evan Engram at the time, but I think Strange has developed into more of an inline guy. So if they can get one of those more move players, clear the space out. You know, they already have like too many receivers to even start to think about. You know, calculating. But now we get one more guy in the mix here from a tight end standpoint. Like, that is actually a really good call. I think they could be an interesting, more heavier personnel team. You got any others you want to throw out here you want to stand on the table for?
No, I'll just stand on the table for Trigg now. But, you know, I would say look at the positions where people say it's really weak.
Okay.
Again, running back, I'm always going to be there. You know that. But tight end, like wide receiver. Wide receiver not getting a lot of love this year, but you just put out the big article.
Dude.
There's a ton of depth here. Right? It's not necessarily, there's 3-4 alpha guys, but like right behind that, you're talking about day two guys in this class? Yes, please.
I know, but you know what the problem with that is? Again, like, I keep coming back to this. Dane Brugler has 17 receivers in his top 100. DJ, when he put out his top 50, I think the first one was 11 wide receivers in the top 50. There's just not that many open spots, because guess what? We did this last year. It was like, oh, a lot of good, interesting day two type receivers.
And the year before.
And look at how many of those guys from last year that I did legit think were interesting day two receivers just kind of got buried.
Yeah.
I mean, a guy like Jalen Noll, like, that dude's he's a stud. He's good.
Great player.
Like, he's a great player. Barely played last year because the Texans had two, like, they have one alpha, and then they've got Christian Kirk, and Christian Kirk likely moving on. I think Jalen Noll will play more this year, but you know, Jaden Higgins, that Xavier Hutchinson's not a complete zero either. Like, they just have Tank Dell might be back. It's like, that's a perfect example of, like, they took two guys in day two last year, and neither one of them had a bad year necessarily. I didn't think they looked lost or anything, but it's just it's a crowded room. Like, that's the state of the receiver position right now. So I'm saying that to sort of guard our listeners and also guard my heart a little bit, you know, because, like, there are going to be guys in this class that I absolutely am just like, this guy's so good, and just gets buried.
Yeah, and it's going to happen every year, but teams almost have to do it just because of the financial piece.
Totally.
Right? You've got a future-proof your room. You cannot end up in a situation like the Saints where you need 3 or 4 receivers in an offseason. It's just too expensive, right? Or you have to get lucky down the board and find those gems that fit your system. But if you are up against it and you have to pay somebody, we're talking about $35 million now.
Dude, Tutu Atwell was getting like $10 million last year. Deami Brown, like $10 million last year. And it's like, by the way, neither of those contracts aged well. the Bills gave Josh Palmer $10 million. It's like, you're a warm body wide receiver 3. You get like $10 million. And like by the end of the year, Deami Brown was a healthy scratch. It's just like, teams won't want to do it. They want to find that guy in the draft. But again, that might be their like wide receiver 4. I don't want to come like in with a giant big brain, like big picture topic here with, you know, we're about to end the show here in a couple of minutes. We got to get out of here. But this is one of those things where in the Dynasty fantasy community, it's very like, oh, if you don't produce as a rookie, like if you get under 500 something yards, like it's over, it's done. I do wonder, again, will they end up becoming, you know, wide receiver 1s in fantasy? I don't know about that, but like, we might need to change or update those rules a little bit, because I think these guys, they still might get kind of lost in the sauce or whatever. You know, they never really emerge. But I think there's going to be a lot of rookies that just like don't play as much earlier if you're further down the depth. Your first round pick, unless you're Matthew Golden, like, you're going to play a lot because you play for the Packers and they rotate everybody. But like, yeah, you see what I mean? Like, there's guys that might be slower developing guys in the day two, day three range because teams are just looking
basically
for.
Basically, we've taken wide receiver and tight end and swap them, right? Tight end.
Yeah.
Tight end was, they won't do anything for 2 years. Like, doesn't matter who they are. And then you saw the Sam Laportas come in, and you saw the Colson Lovelands come in. Like, and then now everybody's like, we need a year one tight end. It's going to be an impact player, maybe a number two target. And wide receivers are like, we're going to have to give them a 2 or 3 year runway. So it's just basically we've taken those two and kind of reversed them.
We have. I don't know what that says about my business going forward, but We'll talk about that off air.
I think you'll be fine.
I think we'll be okay. But no, yeah, that's interesting. Again, I hate to come up with a big picture, like very interesting topic that I'd love to pull on here with 2 seconds left in the show. But on that note, we got to get out of here. Before we do, EJ, tell the people what you're working on this draft season that they can check out.
Yeah, so Bootleg Football on the YouTube channel once a week. We have Patreon shows as well. And then we've got Blue Chip Committee, which is our 4-episode small run deep dive draft show, a couple hours an episode with us and the guys from NFLSE, Trevor and Connor. So check those out as well. They've been a lot of fun.
You guys will absolutely love that. Obviously, Connor and Trevor have been on the show. They're fantastic. EJ's fantastic. Brett Coleman is fantastic. Bootleg Football is electric. We love to see it. It is draft season, baby. It is fully alive. That is going to do it for another edition of the show, another edition of Mock Draft Monday. We'll be back on Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern as we react live to free agency, because yeah, that's happening. Things are we're in the middle of draft season, but we also got to think about free agency. You gotta love the NFL, you gotta love football, you gotta love this show. Until then, we are out.